So how's everyone doing this morning? We're in the book of Romans. We're going through chapter 9, and we are going to be at the end of chapter 9 and going into chapter 10 today. I want to start out with a humorous article titled, 24 Things That Definitely Don't Belong Together. And here's the first one. This is a picture of a painting group. It's a little bit small, but if you look over there in the top left, we have some flowers, flowers, flowers. And then what is that? The hamburger helper glove instead. Things that don't belong together. That's what we're looking for. Here's the next one. This is Chinese takeout in the bathtub. In the bathtub. Doesn't belong together. Here's the next one. So this is a cute little girl with a cute little purse. On the left, you see it's the purse, but as you see, she opens it up. It's actually a cute purse with Cheetos. She's actually onto something there, I think. This next picture, this takes kidney stones to a whole new level here. This is do not use. You see the little goldfish in there? Next one here, a spider in a toilet roll. What could go wrong, right? Does not belong together. Now, when I saw this, I thought this is actually a good idea. Pop-Tarts with raviolis. That is a balanced breakfast, lunch, or dinner all together, all in one. So try that out with your kids sometime. Here's another one. This is the wrong kind of batteries. So it does not belong together. And then we have to go with another spider picture here. What's wrong with this picture? Well, spiders do not belong over your head. That's what's wrong with this picture. And then lastly, we have just down the street here at Five Guys, a peanut butter and bacon milkshake. Sounds delicious, doesn't it? Now, would anyone eat or drink whatever it is there? Would you take one of those peanut butter bacon milkshakes? Would anyone here? Some? All right, I shouldn't have put it up here. Have any of you actually had it? No? Okay, so this is all just hypothetical here. You're like, yeah, I would have jumped in. Okay, I want to give you one more on a serious note here as we've been studying through the book of Romans. And that is God's sovereign election on one side and then human responsibility. From a human perspective, that does not seem to mesh together. So these two words don't seem, it's sort of like, you know, the carrot sticks in the battery. It seems like it doesn't work. It's not going to work there. And Paul spent most of chapter 9, we looked at this last week, showing us that God is sovereign, that he's in charge, that he's in control. And he made it clear in chapter 9 that God elects, that God calls people to salvation. Now, he's then going to transition, starting in verse 30, going from talking about God's sovereign election of people to then transitioning to something that seems at odds with what he just wrote about. He's going to talk about how humans are still responsible for their actions. Now, to help you understand the flow of what's going on in chapters 9 and 10, I want to give you a statement, three sentences together here that boil down chapters 9 and 10. So here's what this statement is. Main idea of these chapters are, God works behind the scenes to elect and call people to faith in him, which we cannot see. That's chapter 9, most of it. But from our side of things, we must have faith to be saved. That's chapter 9, verse 30, halfway through chapter 10. Therefore, Christians are called to proclaim the message of Jesus so others will put their faith in him. That's the last part of chapter 10. Now, looking at this, it doesn't quite make sense, does it? At least from my perspective. Honestly, it looks like these are contradictory, but our job as Christians is not to make sense of everything that God does. Our job is to obey him through faith. And so if you think that you're not going to come to him till you have everything about Christianity figured out. You're going to be waiting a long time because not everything is going to make sense to you. But that should be okay because God is God and we are far less smart. That wasn't a good phrase there. We are not nearly as smart as God. And so not everything that he's going to do is going to make sense to us. And so today, starting in chapter 9, verse 30, we're going to look at those second and third sentence that I read from the main idea. And so again, let me read sentence 2. That from our side of things, we must have faith to be saved. Let me read starting in verse 30. We're not going to look at every verse in the next chapter or so, but I'm going to point out some of the main verses. Verse 30, what shall we say then? That Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness have attained it? That is a righteousness that is by faith. But that Israel who pursued a law that would lead to righteousness did not succeed in reaching the law. So Paul is just coming off of the first, part of chapter 9 here, where he's talking about election, God electing people. And Paul then, in verse 30, looks at two groups of people. There's the Israelites or the Jews, and then there's the non-Jews, which he calls the Gentiles. And he's saying that the Jews are the ones that should have obtained righteousness, which is meaning put their faith in Jesus and declared righteous, as we looked at many, many chapters ago in Romans. After all, these Jews were the ones that knew the Bible. They knew the Old Testament. The Gentiles, on the other hand, did not know the Bible, but they are the ones that obtained righteousness, that put their faith in Jesus Christ. And so Paul asks this question, why is this the case? So verse 32, why? Because they did not pursue it by faith. He's talking about the Jews here. They did not pursue it by faith, but as if they were based on works, they have stumbled over the stumbling stone. So the Jews did not obtain righteousness, meaning they did not put their faith in Jesus because they did not have faith in him. Now, as I was reading about this, I was thinking, this is strange here, because just a few verses before, Paul was talking about how people only come to God through God's calling them, through his election. But then he says that it's because they did not have faith. So there's what he's saying here is something that we have to see is sort of like two sides to this. Now, the main side is what God's doing. But from our perspective now, God is not telling us to understand his side of things. God is telling us to do our side of things. And so the other side is that we, from our perspective, must have faith in Jesus Christ to be saved. And the Jews did not do that. They knew the scripture. But instead, they pursued works, Paul says. The works are thinking that they could maybe do things to be declared right before God. They were trying to earn God's favor through doing good things, through action, through thinking through pretending to think the right thing. But if they could do that, then if they could pursue works, then they would have obtained righteousness. And Paul says it only comes through faith. In fact, Paul says not only did they pursue works, but they were very good at pursuing works. Verse 2 of chapter 10, for I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God. So they were zealous about what they were doing. The only problem is that they were zealous in the wrong area. So they pursued works with a zeal, but God wasn't asking them to pursue works with a zeal. God wasn't asking them to try to be good on their own with zeal. God was asking for that zeal to be put in their faith in Jesus Christ. And so that is what they should have done. They did the other thing, and so many Jews did not obtain righteousness. Verse 3 of chapter 10, they did not submit to God's righteousness, for Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. So he's saying there that salvation comes not through what you can do for God. Salvation comes by putting your faith in Jesus Christ, and that is the only way that you are saved. Now, I've talked about this before, and we've talked about this as we've gone through Romans, but let me just remind everyone here that your actions do not get you saved, and your actions do not impact the way that God thinks of you in terms of salvation. And so all that good that you have done does not impact whether or not you are saved. Now, the opposite is true as well, that all the bad you have done does not impact whether or not you have been saved or you are saved. The only way that you obtain righteousness, that you are saved, is through faith in Jesus Christ. And so your actions will hopefully be impacted by your faith, but it is not your actions that determine whether or not you're saved. And so I hope everyone does good things, but I also want you to remember that those good things are not what saves you. So you may ask then, as we're thinking about this big picture here of chapter 9 and chapter 10 together, where does election come in to all of this? If Paul's saying that we must have faith, then what's with this whole election deal? I mean, how do I know if I'm elected? And I like how one pastor, this is R. Kent Hughes, I like how he puts it. He says, the scriptures never say, try to determine whether you are elect. Instead, they say, believe in the Lord Jesus and you will be saved. That's Acts 16:31. Or, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. That's John 1:12. And so don't worry about whether or not you are, quote, one of the elected ones, one of the called ones. Your job is to worry about, do you have faith in Jesus Christ? Have you called out to Jesus and asked him to be your Lord? That is your job. You let God worry about the other parts. And so in chapter 10, verses 5 through 13, Paul essentially repeats everything that we've just looked at. So I'm going to read some of the main verses there, but we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. He says, this is starting verse 9, if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart one believes and is justified, and with the mouth one confesses and is saved. For the scriptures say, everyone who believes in him will not be put to shame. For there is no distinction between Jew or Greek, for the same Lord is Lord of all, bestowing his riches on all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. So again, I don't know how all of this works together, and I'm not called to understand all of it, but I am called to obedience and to have faith in him. And so for the rest of the chapter now, we're going to sort of explore this idea so that if God's sovereign election is really beyond our pay grade, so to speak, then if we are told to have faith in Jesus, what does this mean for those that already have faith in Jesus? So what does this mean for Christians? And one may start to think that if God elects people, then, you know, I might as well just sit back and think, oh, I don't need to worry about my faith because God is sovereign, because God's in control. Or I don't need to worry about the faith of others because God is in control. God's the one that elects, and so I'm just not going to do anything. And I've read about churches. There's one church that I read that as they sort of thought through the sovereign will of God, they decided they were just going to cut completely out. They were going to cut their missions budget completely. Because, after all, God's the one that elects. And so, let's put their money on something else. Now, with that in mind, I want to talk about the last sentence, where he says, therefore, Christians are called to proclaim the message of Jesus, so others will put their faith in him. So let me read starting in verse 14. How then will they call on him who have not believed? And how are they to believe in him whom they have not heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. But they have not all obeyed the gospel. For Isaiah says, Mike, you can go to the next slide there. For Isaiah says, Lord, who has believed what he has heard from us? So faith comes from hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ. So Paul walks us through this progression here that I want to show us. Starting in verse 15 or 14, he says, first of all, that you won't call on Christ for salvation unless you believe in him. Step one. But the next thing is, you won't believe unless you hear about it being the good news of Jesus. And the third thing is, you won't hear about it unless someone tells you. So you won't call unless you believe, you won't believe unless you hear, and you won't hear unless someone tells you. And then last, no one will tell you unless they are sent. So in other words, for a person to get from here, no faith, to here, faith, someone has to go and help them hear about it. And those people are the ones who he calls, or he says in this passage, they have beautiful feet. Beautiful feet. How beautiful are the feet of those who call or who proclaim the good news. And so I wanted to illustrate this idea. And so I did a Google search on the words ugly feet. And I came across an interesting article that showed famous actresses dressed up for the red carpet, and it then examines their feet. So it zooms in on their feet. So here's Tyra Banks, and then if you look down at her toes, go forward one, Paul or Mike, and then you look down at her toes there, her toes are not nearly as dressed up as the rest. Or this is, this next one, this is Kate Bosworth. So the feet of Kate Bosworth. Did you go one? Go back one, I think. Is that, okay, all right, maybe I have it mixed up then. That may be the feet of Kate. I may have mixed these slides up. But we have the feet of Kate Bosworth, and then let's go on. Go ahead one more, and one more. And then this is, I think, Kate Beckinsale. But that may have been the other one. All right, I'm getting all confused. This is what I get when I don't go over the PowerPoint closely. I may have mixed them up here. Then we have this next one. This is Natalie Portman, famous actress who, maybe you can't see it as well here as on a computer screen, but her feet ain't looking so good. They're not looking so good. And then, just to be fair, I don't want to pick on everyone else, and so I included a picture of my feet as well. And so, there's my feet. My feet ain't looking so good either. So, you got everyone's feet there. But listen, if we were looking at the symbolic feet of Christians, of their, so to speak, spiritual feet, then the ones that have the ugliest feet, the Christians with the ugliest feet, would be the ones that do nothing in regards to proclaiming the name of Jesus. The ones with the most beautiful feet, like this on the picture here, The ones with the most beautiful feet are going to be the ones who are proclaiming the message of Jesus to those around them. Because Paul says, how beautiful are the feet of those who proclaim the good news. Now, I know many of you are going to roll your eyes at this next illustration if you haven't already rolled your eyes at the last one. But I want to give you an illustration from Star Wars. And this is probably my only Star Wars illustration for the year of 2022. So when we think about proclaiming Jesus, Dave, you just knocked the lights off. Thank you. Can you go ahead and turn those on? Thank you. When we are thinking about proclaiming Jesus, there are two types of people. So there is Jabba the Hutt on one side. Jabba is first seen in Return of the Jedi. So he is a very powerful character in politics and in the criminal underworld. And however, he doesn't move very much. So Jabba just sort of sits there and everything is brought to him. He has his food within grasp. He has his Princess Leia within grasp there. And so everything is just sort of right there. Now, on the other hand, there is Boba Fett. Boba Fett is not nearly as powerful as Jabba the Hutt, but he is actually the one in the movie to go and capture Han Solo. And so while Jabba the Hutt is just looking intimidating and but sitting back and doing nothing, Boba Fett is the one that gets things done. And why is that? Because he acts. He goes. Boba works hard. Now, my point is that many Christians act like Jabba the Hutt, where we are just sitting back thinking, we're going to wait for them to come to us. We have this great message. Just wait till they come and ask about it. And we just wait and think and wait. And we don't want to offend anybody, so we're going to let them bring it up to us. But that's not what Paul is saying here to do. Paul in this passage is saying, hey, be like Boba Fett. Go, send, act. And the same is true not just for individuals, but for us as a church. As a church, if we want to make an impact in our community, in this world, then guess what? We have to go to them, not wait for them to just come up to us. In the year 2022, most people are not going to stroll up to this secluded church, going up this long driveway to a building they can't see, and get to this cracked parking lot and walk in and say, hey, can you tell me how to be saved? Most people are not going to do that. Instead, we have to go to them. And so may we as a church never be a Jabba the Hutt kind of church. Instead, I want to challenge each of us. Let's be a Boba Fett church. Bet you never expected to hear that when you came today. Because that's what God is calling us to do. And so we will not make an impact in this community unless we go and unless we act. And so we as individuals and we as a church will not make an impact on this community unless we act. We must act. Now this raises the question though, how do we act? And so I want to read a few verses from 1 Corinthians chapter 9 that gives us sort of an idea of what we should do. So starting in verse 19, for though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew, in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those under the law I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became the weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. And I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessings. So here's what I think he's getting at in these couple of verses here. Paul was willing to step outside of his comfort zone. There's a point here, Mike. Paul was willing to step outside of his comfort zone, traditions and customs, in order to reach people. And so should we. So should we water down the gospel? And the answer is no, because what he's saying there is that we are doing all of this to reach people for the gospel. And so we must be willing to get uncomfortable to reach people who do not know him. I read a story a while back about a computer guy from the 1980s. And along with some other people, he developed a new way to use the computer to do graphics. And so at one point in the 1980s, he showed this new way to the makers of Star Wars. And he said that you can use this for special effects and editing. And they told him that it would take too much time to do this. So he went to the makers of Disney and he tried to get them to use it for the animated movies. And up to that point, you know, if you remember, animated movies were all done by hand, drawn one little frame at a time. And they told him, saying, "Why would we want to do this?" So this poor guy had invented this amazing thing and no one wanted him. No one wanted what he offered. That is, until his company was bought by a man named Steve Jobs. And Steve allowed this company to begin using the system to make a movie of their own. And so this movie ended up being called, anyone know? Oh, well, there you go. Toy Story, yes. Toy Story, which was the first full-length computer animated movie by Pixar. And Pixar's movies revolutionized animated movies. And nowadays, just about every animated movie is made in this way, done by computers. Now, years later, Disney bought Pixar for a small sum of $7.4 billion. And then they took the leaders of Pixar and they put them in charge at Disney Animation. Now, here's my point. Disney completely missed out of years of the opportunities for this thing, of years of opportunities to improve and to get better and to sort of get beyond other people, simply because they said, this is not the way that we've done it before. They didn't want to get uncomfortable. Star Wars missed out because they thought, this will be too much work. And listen, may Christians not be the same. May we not think, oh, I don't want to reach people because it's too much work, because it gets me uncomfortable. So let me ask you, are you willing to become all things to all people that by all means you might save some? I want to give you some ways that you can do this, or ways that you can learn to do this. So in February, our reading challenge book of the month was this book up here on the screen. This is called Tactics. And when I read this, this is the first time I read it in February. And let me tell you, this is one of the most, one of the best books I've read on the topic of evangelism. And so it will give you some amazing insights on how you can best steer conversations towards faith or talk to people about faith in a very non-confrontational way. So it tells you ways that you can share about Jesus without having to make it seem super weird. And so I want to encourage every one of you to grab this book and to read it in the very near future. It's a great book. I also want to remind you that as a church, we have an outreach that's going on right now called Pray Hampstead. And so as a church, our goal is to pray for every house in Hampstead. And so we are going out and just reaching every house, and we're putting a little flyer on their near their mailbox, just letting them know that we've prayed for them. And so this is underway, but really this is the first month now that the weather has gotten good. And now it is nice where it doesn't get dark in the evening. We can go and you can walk around at 5, 6, even 7 o'clock without looking suspicious out there, putting stuff on mailboxes. And so I want to encourage every one of you to get involved in this. And this is also a great opportunity for families together to work, to do it. So you can go together, walk together down one neighborhood and just put them on there and you can pray together. And so Pray Hampstead is a great opportunity. There should be a website listed in your bulletin on how you can do this. And there's a little training video we have on our website. And if you need more information, just give us a call. There's also another way that you can get involved, and that's by inviting people to the Easter service. And so studies show that non-churchgoers are far more likely to attend church if they are invited. Go figure, right? And so, but they've done studies on this. And whereas at one point there's maybe a 5, 10, 20% chance of them just deciding to come, if they're invited by someone they know, that percentage increases dramatically. And so Easter is one of those times where many people who don't go to church are more willing to consider going to church. And so I want to encourage you to pray about someone that you can invite to come to church with you, or you can meet with them at church. Maybe go to church and then go out to lunch after that, or go have the Easter dinner, lunch together after that. So that's another way, another simple way that you can do this. Also, we have several outreaches coming up. And in May, we have our Spring Kids Festival. That's in mid-May. More information will be coming out about that soon. In June, we have our Vacation Bible School. And both of these events bring in people who do not attend church into the building, and we are able to reach them, show them the love of Jesus, and we have had people that attend VBS that then decide that they're going to start attending church. And so this is a great opportunity to get people plugged in to where they can hear more about faith in Jesus Christ. And so my prayer here for each of you is that each of you will have beautiful feet. That each of you will be able to, symbolically speaking here, hold up your feet. What's that? Nope, not going to do that. Hold up your feet, and I look at it and I say, wow, those are good looking feet. So next week, we're going to have a foot washing ceremony. No, we're not going to. But my prayer is that as we all pursue to have more beautiful feet, that we will make an impact in this community. That, listen, they are not going to just randomly come. And so Paul's saying, hey, go to them. Go to them and reach them and tell them and proclaim to them that Jesus is Lord and that you're only saved through faith, not through works, not through actions, but through faith in Jesus Christ. I want to close with this story that I read this week. This is about a 10-year-old named Tilly and her British family. And they were on vacation in, I believe it was in January, a number of years ago, in Thailand at Mai Khao Beach. And it was a beautiful day that they were out walking. There was a warm breeze that was hitting their face, and the white sand beaches were squishing beneath their toes there, squishing in between their toes. And as they walked along, something happened. Now, 2 weeks before this, Tilly had been in school and learned about tsunamis in geography class. Now, she didn't like geography class very much, but when the teacher showed a picture or showed a video of tsunamis, that sort of grabbed her attention, and she paid more attention to that. And so, as they were walking along this Thai beach, when the waves started going out and not coming back in, Tilly, the 10-year-old, took notice. And so, she told her parents that she thought a tsunami was coming. Now, parents, if you're walking along the beach and your kid, your 10-year-old, says, I think a tsunami's coming, how many of you are going to listen? Well, all right. Am I the only one? I'm like, all right, just go play. Just use your bodyboard when it comes. But Tilly insisted Tilly insisted. And so she started yelling that a tsunami was coming, and this upset Tilly's little sister. And so the parents still didn't believe her, but because Tilly's little sister was upset, the dad took the little sister back to the hotel, and Tilly and her mom were left out there on the beach. Now, Tilly looked around, and she saw all of these people that were in danger. And so she ran to the hotel, and she saw her dad talking to a security guard. The dad told the security guard, I know this sounds completely mad. They're British, by the way. I know this sounds completely mad, but my daughter says there's going to be a tsunami. Now, the article went on to say this. I'm going to read this part. The security guard listened not to a PhD candidate, brain surgeon, or NASA scientist, but to a passionate plea coming from a 10-year-old British schoolgirl. The guard listened and then shouted for people to get off the beach. People scattered over the place as pandemonium set in. The hotel lobby, which was on the higher floor, became a gathering place. And then a tsunami triggered by an earthquake at the floor of the Indian Ocean struck. And the tsunami killed an estimated 230,000 people. But not one person from Tilly's beach died that we know of. Tilly's dad, in shock after learning of the horrific devastation and suffering, said to Tilly, "What if we hadn't listened to you?" I want to also ask the question, what if Tilly hadn't spoken up? And listen, church, we know the truth. And the truth is that salvation is only found through faith in Jesus Christ. So I want to ask you, are you going to keep it to yourself, or are you going to proclaim it to others with beautiful feet? And the choice is yours, but I want to challenge you. Let's be intentional about proclaiming the message of Jesus Christ. Let's go ahead and spend a moment now in prayer.